We've been talking a lot on Recovery Now about the 12-step process, and we've come along to step number 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And the beauty of the 12 steps is that as we go through it, as we journey through that 12-step process, we revisit our relationship to God, that power, God as we understand him. And today we're going to be delving a little bit deeper into that, because we thought we had it done in step number 3 of about turning our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now we're allowing God to remove all these defects of character. Alongside is the Reverend Dr. Dan Geeting, as usual, and we are very privileged once again to have our friend Joe Herzanek on, the author of Why Don't They Just Quit, an outstanding guide to helping you through all of the many questions you might have about alcoholism or drug abuse. And Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's great to be back with you again, Ned and Dan. I enjoyed our last show, and glad you have me back.
So we're going to be talking about this step number 6 today, what families and friends need to know about addiction and recovery in step number 6. And that just came right from the cover of Joe's book. And Dan, this is one of those deals that it seems more cyclical. Things keep certain themes keep cropping up in this 12-step process.
I think as we see the progression of step 6, it is again coming into a greater relationship with the higher power, and it is opposite of powerlessness and unmanageability. We can't, but our creator, our higher power, can. And it's it looks like it's a readiness for the higher power to work, and in that, what do you see about that, Joe? Right now, in as you see the progression of step 6.
Well, what I see is that first of all, we should probably back up just a little, because step 1, we admitted we're powerless over our alcohol or our addiction, our lives are unmanageable. And, you know, we come to believe, and we made a decision to turn our will over to the life, care of God as we understood him. And then in steps 4 and 5, we sort of dig now and find out what's really going on with ourselves. We write out our life story, and we talk about the good things and the bad things. And out of that 4th and 5th step, we will typically come up with a list of character defects or shortcomings, however you want to say it. And what I found, and what I find often with many people that I work with in the jails, is that step 6 is sort of where the rubber meets the road. This is all about taking responsibility, not shifting the blame, and seeing exactly what we need to work on in character defects.
Well, and, you know, as you're saying that, I had run across in working with addiction a copy of the 12 Steps in Reverse, and it's sort of a very tongue-in-cheek representation of what life is if it's the opposite of healthy 12-step recovery. And one of the author put down here is that I sought through alcohol to overcome my responsibilities and the escape the realities of life. And as you were just saying, that step 6 is really coming to grips with the realities of life as they are and the realities that they have been in addiction.
Right, and I, like so many people, even in step 1, there was a lot of denial. That was a major character defect. I mean, I drank and I used drugs compulsively, obsessively, regardless of consequences, and I just plowed on with this. And that was the biggest character defect that I had to immediately deal with. And after that comes things like fear and self-pity and impatience and laziness, procrastination, all kinds of things that I realized I had in my life, but I medicated a lot of that away with alcohol and drugs.
You know, as you are talking, I remember recently talking to a recovering addict alcoholic that had just come out of prison, and they were just saying how scary it was to get in touch with these defects. I think there's a lot of hope in step six, as you know, there's a lot of fear of looking at our pain, brokenness, and limitation. And isn't step six a way of a pathway of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel on letting go of some of these things?
Absolutely. Step six is about growing up, being having a feeling of self-confidence, being able to go out in the world and live and socialize and enjoy life to some degree, alcohol and substance free. And if I don't deal with these character defects, then I will, you know, it's one thing to just stop that compulsive alcohol and drug use, as wonderful as that is. That's just the beginning, because there were lots of reasons that I drank or continued to drink and use that as a way of escape. I was a very impatient person. I had this self-pity. If you only knew my problems, then you'd understand why I drank and the way that I did. But really, what I realized was I was not unique. There was so many people just like me. But reaching that point of being entirely ready and then having God remove all these defects of character, that's halfway through the program, probably for a reason, if you know what I mean. You know, like one thing, for instance, with me was this, I thought my assertiveness was an asset, but really it was not an asset, because I was way too assertive. I was aggressive. And to sort of get back in balance emotionally was now a project that was I needed to begin to work on and still continue to this day working on, you know, trying to improve, trying to get better. And in it's really exciting as you go through this.
What's interesting to me, Joe, you were talking about your assertiveness. In step three, we're making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. It's a sort of surrender. And then in step six, I mean, we've gone through four and five, and then finally we arrive at this point where we say we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And maybe compare and contrast that surrender to God that takes place in step three and then being ready to have God remove the defects of character.
Well, a lot of this also is about honesty, being honest about what's going on in my life. And when I see what's really going on and I see that I have these character defects, you know, the next step is to remove them so that I can have some peace of mind. And one of the great things about recovery and the 12-step program is that you can not only quit and stop the obsessive use, but you can also have peace of mind and enjoyment. And, you know, once we list these things, maybe we were lazy procrastinators, but we thought our procrastination was, well, as soon as I figure out exactly how to do whatever it is, I will do it. But really, that's a disguise for perfectionism in a way. You know, I learned that I just need to take steps forward. And, you know, sometimes it's two steps forward and one back. But as long as I'm moving in the right direction, this God of my understanding is willing to help me each step of the way.
A lot of questions I get asked have to do with a time frame of something. And what was that time frame for you arriving to step six?
Well, I would say it was probably in the area of at least a few months, 4, 5, 6 months before I had worked through this self-examination that we do in steps four and five, and then admitted to my sponsor, that's who I did my fifth step with, just exactly what was going on in my life and why I thought those things were going on. So after about, 4 to 6 months, I was ready to start dealing with a lot of these character defects. And, you know, what I think happens is a lot of us start drinking or using drugs when we're young, and for me it was like the age of 13. So my emotional maturity level was put on hold. And what I did was the frustrations of life, my new coping skill was to drink or just avoid this problem altogether.
Go ahead. One of the things, like you were saying, is that you talk to a sponsor. And I think as we keep looking at that, is the interconnectedness of recovery, that it's not done in a silo. It's not a me alone, a Lone Ranger type thing. But also one of the things that I thought was interesting was when you went back to that honesty and how that gets you back to step one, foundational, that you never leave that, but it becomes a bedrock for continuing recovery. And then I was thinking of a saying that I really ran across in recovery groups, and I liked it, and it was how honesty, openness, and willingness. And those three things were real important to have. And then one thing that you brought out too, out of your own experience, was that tendency that people can have of perfectionism and not seeing that growth is a goal and complementing that. And, you know, all of our understanding of our own higher power and growth in that, I come to the place of relating out of my Judeo-Christian heritage in the formation of my higher power. And one of the things that came to me was that Christ said that he would come with grace and truth. And there was truth, but there was also that grace. That was the gifting of oneself and learning how to be good to self and affirm the growth instead of having that demanding, I have to be perfect at it, but growth is my goal and not perfection. And I found that very powerful, but I see that as you're telling your story of how that it just weaves into the recovery lifestyle and also the we-ness of recovery. And as people develop their relationship with a higher power, that connectedness with the recovery community probably is really helpful, that a person doesn't get lost in this process.
Right, and that's another reason why just going to meetings is simply not going to be enough. We need to go to the meetings, we need to work the steps, and we need to get a sponsor, because there are certain things, everybody has some skeletons in their closet, some really quirky things or some things that they have done, or maybe some things that have been done to them, and they need to get this out. And this is where step six really is important. I talked with a guy one time who had been out of prison for about 15 years, and he said he lived by these three rules. He says if it's illegal, irresponsible, or immoral, then he's not going to do it. And so I need to think deeply about things like this. What really is irresponsible? What is immoral? Because a lot of those things are what kept me in bondage to my alcohol and drug abuse a lot longer than it really needed to be.
With immoral or irresponsible, what process did you use to determine what was what? I mean, what was your foundation, your basis?
Well, first of all, illegal, irresponsible, was it against the law, for one thing? I mean,
yeah.
Substance use, most of the substances are illegal to use in the first place, or if you're getting prescription meds from somebody else and things like that. So I knew immediately there were certain things that were illegal and irresponsible. Immoral was another issue, and you know, one of the things that I found out early on was from my past, I sort of liked pornography. Well, I also knew that I have an addictive personality and that problem could only get worse over time, so I made the choice just not to be involved in it at all. And everybody's a little bit different, But I think sometimes we know what's right and wrong. We have this conscience, and it quickens us and lets us know where we should be and where maybe we should avoid. I had a real problem with anger for a long, long time, and that thing seems to rear its ugly head even today once in a while. But I have much more control over it today than I did 20 years ago.
One of the things that I think that a lot of people do when they first get into recovery and start looking at recovery, and you can have a group and you're talking to these new starters that really are just breaking denial. And many times in treatment centers, at least the one that I had worked in, it was in the good old days where you had 5 to 6 weeks of treatment. And a lot of times people would, you know, check off step one, step two, step three, step four. And in their subconscious and in their mind, they're thinking, I've already done it. I've done it. I've done it. And thinking of, well, when I get done with my 12 steps, I'm recovered and I've done the 12 steps and this is it. And not seeing it as you have talked, I see that step six is a continuum. As you're, it's like somebody going around the mountain, but you come around the mountain and you're at a different level on the other side when you come back to some of these issues. And that I think can be a real exciting part of recovery. And some might see it that, oh no, I'm never going to be free of this. I'm never going to be, I think they see this as a very difficult thing, and not seeing the journey of that day-by-day process. It's so important to stay within hope and that joy of recovery.
Right, and I think that the 12 steps, all of them, give us some boundaries to know where we, a framework for living, you might say. What I have found often with people that I work with is that, especially in the jail where I work full-time, is that most guys will have never done a fourth or fifth step. And then in treatment facilities, like you mentioned, sometimes that's part of the 28-day program, is to do your fourth and fifth step, which is fine, but also just understanding that, you know, that early in recovery, there's probably going to be a few other things that pop up as time goes along. You may want to even consider redoing that at some point down the road, once you've had a sponsor, once you've built some rapport, and those kinds of things.
I think what you just said was that many times people do start in this recovery process, and when they get a chance to do a fourth or a fifth, they do it to the best of their ability. And I think it's real important for them to realize that there are times as things, as they grow in their recovery, there's more issues that maybe need to be addressed. And also, I was acquainted with people that have been counselors. And I remember this one counselor telling me that he relapsed. And one thing that had happened was in his spiritual program, that there were some things that he needed to deal with that really needed more work on, that he discovered that led to relapse, that hadn't really been taken care of in his first, fourth, and fifth step, and that it was a way of revelation to him, that it was a growth for deeper healing, and his relapse really turned out to be a what some people call a therapeutic slip, that it really opened his door, but he was willing enough to go that extra mile to say, I will pay the price no matter what it is, and really putting the whole self into that recovery process, which I think goes along with that surrender of step three and that willingness to continue on. One thing that I think of is the statement that truth shall set you free. It does set us free. It doesn't mean that there isn't any pain, and no pain, no gain in some respects, but it can be a healing pain and a healing discomfort versus the destructive kind of which addiction just spirals into all aspects of one's living.
Right, and your statement, the truth will set you free. And, I came in originally to the program an agnostic and maybe an atheist. I don't know. I was pretty ambivalent about this whole spiritual component. But step one made me realize that I really couldn't handle this substance use problem on my own. And my spiritual journey sort of began there, but it even got deeper as we got farther into the steps. And, I searched around for different religions. I tried transcendental meditation, just about everything you could think of. And I ended up for myself with just basic Christianity and what the Bible says. I mean, there's a quote in the New Testament that says, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. And one of the truths is that you can live life and enjoy life pretty well alcohol and substance free. So, this journey of recovery, I mean, even in step 10 where it says we continue to take personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Well, that really is a kind of an echo off of step 6 and 7 where we go through life, we make some mistakes, and we make an amends later on, but we are willing to swallow our pride, so to speak, and admit when we come up short. And I was not willing to do that before I came into the 12-step program.
We have a few minutes left. What I'm curious about, Joe, is a couple of times you were talking about the involvement of your sponsor in going through these steps. And would you address that, the importance of a sponsor and the role of that sponsor?
Well, the role of the sponsor is critical. I mean, it's just critical. And the reason is you can go to AA meetings or NA meetings. You can sit in a group and you can share with this group at a certain level. And beyond that, you can't go with a group of, or you shouldn't go with a group of people that you don't know that well. Even though you've gotten to know some people in the group, all of us have some issues that are, really there's very few people that need to know everything about my past. But I need to have some one person that I can trust to do that with, and that would be my sponsor. I used a sponsor, and I touched base with him several times a week for the first few years, and it's really paid off. This guy was just a great guy, really committed to the program, and with the sponsor and a sponsor that's encouraging you to work the steps just as well. I mean, not just a buddy you can hang out with and have coffee with, but where you can really drag all those skeletons out of the closet. Let's examine them one time and then get rid of them. That's what a sponsor is there for.
What would be the criteria for choosing a sponsor?
Well, first of all, coming in new to the program, I wanted someone that had a couple of years of sobriety and was pretty active, and then I would listen when they spoke during meetings. And I just sort of made a judgment that this person seems pretty sincere. He seems pretty genuine. He's talking about enjoying life. I can relate to what he's saying. And so then after a meeting, asking this person to, can we get a coffee? I'd like to talk to you about sponsorship. All these are growth steps. To reach out and ask for some help is part of this whole recovery process. And, asking for a sponsor is to have a sponsor that you can share things with is critical to recovery. I don't know how you do it without a sponsor.
It's that sounding board. It's that confidant. It's that one person that you can tell everything to and know that you're in a safe place.
Right, right. I had a situation. I think I even put it in the book, so I'll go ahead and share it. But, I used to be so angry at times with my former wife. One time we got in this big argument at my apartment, and she left, her purse there. And I took her purse out on the barbecue grill and dumped everything on the grill and set it on fire. And that was how I dealt with my anger. I just found some way to lash out. Now, the really interesting thing is that here we are a couple decades later, and we are really good friends. She will actually come out and even hike with my current wife and myself, and we have a great time together. So, you know, this really does work. It really does repair the damage that's been done. And some things take time, and there are obviously a few relationships that are broken, and they're going to stay broken. But an awful lot of them can be repaired, and it's through working and admitting and being honest and taking responsibility for my own actions that really made this all happen. Mm,
a lot of what I tell people when we introduce them to the process is that this is a part of being a human being, a part of the human condition, and to think of 12-step as a process of becoming a whole person. And I like that story you just told about the friendship you have with her and how that relationship was mended. Now, before we let you go this week, need to know, how do I get a copy of this wonderful book, Why Don't They Just Quit?
Well, you can get it several different ways. You can go to our website, whydontheyjustquit.com. It's available on amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it for you. But just go on the Internet and type in Why Don't They Just Quit, and you'll come up with a list of sites that you can order this from. And regardless of where you go, it's the same price. It's $24.95. It's the same price whether it's Amazon or our site, or and it doesn't really make a lot of difference to us where you go, but just for convenience, you can get it about anywhere.
And folks, this is a delightful read. It's a good read. It is packed full of information. If what families and friends need to know about addiction and recovery, and it's just a really great resource for you. So I highly recommend that. So, Joe, I just appreciate you being back. You're going to join us next week, and we're going to tackle the next step. You know, step number 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, and that sounds like a lot of red meat, so we're looking forward to that.
Me too.
And Dan, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Enjoyed being here, and Joe, just really enjoyed having time to dialogue about this important step.
Well, I too, I agree. All the steps are important, but these, the 6 and 7, they're really critical to having some real peace of mind.
You can go through the tunnel. You can manage this disease. You can live a full, healthy, and fruitful life. And the 12 steps are a part of that, a part of returning you to sanity, returning you to being a whole human being and enjoying the life that was given to you. So until next week, this is Ned Wicker. You've been listening to Recovery Now. Thank you so much, and God bless.